the Devil's Advocates, making radio great again.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show, the Tuesday edition. I got Batman live in studio. Wham! Pow! He's Matt Rothschild. He is the vigilante of good governance. Matt, we were, you know, casting a little shade on the Republicans. I love to see a party in disarray. Can't wait until their little soiree down at the Marriott West in Middleton, May 20th. They're going to pick their champion. I sure do hope they tear it down, burn it down on the way. That party, it deserves it. But let's talk about the Democratic Party, because we've got a competitive primary, especially the race to go up against Ron Johnson. And before we talk about the guerrilla warrior that is Ron Johnson, let's talk about the at least the top tier of the Democratic senatorial candidates. Tom Nelson's taking some pot shots in the short run at Alex Lazary and Mandela Barnes. And his rationale is effectively the public funding of the Bucks Arena. Now, Matt, the Menominee tribe, when they hoped to build a casino in partnership with the Hard Rock, they had offered $250 million. And Scott Walker said no and put we, the taxpayer, on the hook and said, oh, cheaper to keep them. Look at how much they pay in taxes. I'm like, you know, that is whatever. Setting aside his bad marketing, ultimately, we, the taxpayers, are on the hook for a private basketball arena that, you know, serves many purposes. But does it serve the taxpayers' benefit to the tune of $250 million? I mean, I've always had issue with publicly funded private stadiums.
Yeah, I have issues with this welfare for billionaires, which is what that was. I mean, the Lazary family, they're billionaires. And why did they need all this money from us, the Wisconsin taxpayers?
Because otherwise they'd move the franchise. Well, and they got Herb Cole to up $100 million. I mean, he's a private citizen. He also got to sell the team and, you know, put his name in part on the new stadium. But if it hadn't been for the Coles money and the state taxpayers' money, well, hell, they could have moved that team on down the road, Matt.
And then young Alex wouldn't be running, would he? I mean, it's kind of grotesque. I mean, I agree with Tom Nelson.
Well, he might be running for Senate in a different state, but go ahead, Matt.
You know, I agree with Tom Nelson here. I think it's a legitimate shot at Alex Lazary for, you know, hitting the taxpayers for this corporate subsidy that is the Bucks Arena. And, you know, it's one thing for the Lazarys to shake down Herb Cole. It's another thing for them to, you know, shake down the government and shake down us, the taxpayers, for their private enterprise. And I'm against that. I don't think we should have that kind of corporate welfare.
I haven't really read in extensively to the reporting on this topic. What's Nelson's complaint against Mandela Barnes? Wasn't this a Scott Walker policy, effectively?
Yeah, I'm not sure why he's got Mandela mixed in.
Was Mandela as a state lawmaker? Was he pro-public subsidy at the Bucks Arena?
But I think this is going to help Mandela Barnes, actually, because the main shot is at Alex Lazary. And if he brings Lazary down, that's going to help Mandela, because Mandela's in the lead right now. Lazary's crawling up, getting close to him. If Tom Nelson, who's down at 5% in the last Marquette Law School poll, can scuff up Alex Lazary, that's going to help Mandela Barnes, even if he does a kind of secondary a punch at Mandela.
So anything that's bad for the front runners is probably good for the lesser known candidates.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm surprised that Mandela hasn't really gotten hit here. You know, this is a main shot at Alex Lazary, and Lazary's vulnerable. I mean, let's face it, guy hasn't held elective office. He isn't a Wisconsinite. He is a billionaire son who's running as you know, in his ads with hard hats on. I mean, that doesn't really sound true to the viewer or the listener, I think, where billionaire son's got his hard hat on the whole time. I mean, come on now.
But he does have a lot of support, talking about Lazary specifically, from the unions, our friends, the Teamsters. They endorsed really early. And a lot of the unions have gotten behind Lazary. And in no small part, it seems to be the way he dealt with the unions during the construction phase of the Pfizer Forum. So, you know, I'm not willing to throw Alex Lazary out with the complaint of one of his political opponents, but the interaction on the FISERP certainly seems to make him the preferred candidate of the unions currently.
Yeah, and he's got union money behind him for sure. And his ads speak very strongly about union positions. So I agree with his substance, his policies, but I just don't know if his authenticity is gonna have a little hollow ring to it. But look, his ads seem to be moving the dial. I mean, so as much as I criticize kind of the goofiness of him in a hard hat, I mean, I can see the results of these ads, and they seem to be working for him, and he's got scads of money. And so can he buy a Senate seat? That's the question.
That is the question indeed. He's Matt Rothschild. He is the vigilante of good governance. Now, Matt, the entirety of your career, at least as long as I've known you, you've paid a lot of attention to the money flowing into the races, the dark money, the candidate money, the disclosure, or the failure to disclose. Seems like a lot of money's flowing in right now in opposition to Ron Johnson. A lot of dark money. I've seen some ads. Matt, do we know where the money's coming in opposition to Ron? Or is it sort of generic friends, don't let friends vote for Ron Johnson PAC sort of stuff?
Well, some of it is dark money. If they say don't vote for Ron Johnson, though, they have to disclose who their donors are at some point. If it's just, you know, Ron Johnson is selling snake oil with this stuff about COVID, call Ron Johnson and tell him to stop being a snake oil salesman. No one's going to ever know who's paying for that ad. So that's the problem with dark money. I mean, I don't care what side they're on. I want to know who's paying for the ad.
Well, there's a $2.7 million TV and digital ad buy from Majority Forward.
I love the name.
That tells
you
everything
too.
You need to know, right? Majority Forward. That apparently is a Democratic-supported group that's opposing Ron with ads. They've got a new spot titled Phony. There are some other ads up. Of course, we've talked about Alex Lazary. He's got new ads up. And Tom Nelson, I thought the fact that he picked this spot, obviously he doesn't have the financial resources. The others do, at least if we're talking about Godlewski and quite frankly, Lazary, and maybe even Mandela if you look at the campaign contributions. But he ran an ad. Nelson ran an ad during the Bucks game last night, during the losing game four. And during the playoffs, he basically attacked Alex Lazary as his team was fighting for another win in the playoffs. So I love his strategy. Is it going to be enough?
I don't think it's going to help Tom Nelson. The attack ads from someone who's sitting at 5%, whether you like the guy or not, and I happen to like Tom Nelson, and I think he's done a good job. I think he's got great union credentials and progressive credentials, so don't get me wrong there. But taking a shot at the guy who's got a chance at winning the nomination is not going to help you get the nomination, I don't think, especially if you're way down at 5%. It'd be one thing if Mandela Barnes threw that haymaker, but at most it's going to raise a few questions in a few people's minds about Alex Lazary, but I don't think it was the greatest ad ever, so I don't think it's going to have a great effect on the race one way or another, actually, but I don't think it's going to help Tom Nelson.
Okay, let's talk about the guerrilla warrior himself, Ron Johnson, and let's start with the context of Roe v. Wade. Obviously, this political blockbuster, got a draft opinion from Alito that would seem to indicate Roe v. Wade is going to be overturned, not if, but when. So with that as the context, Ron Johnson is quoted this week as saying effectively, he believes it all starts at conception. Life begins at conception, which, puts him, I would say, in some sort of a statistical minority. But the issue of abortion and Roe v. Wade and sometimes Democrats' reluctance to go out there and lead with the words that are necessary to shake and rattle the electorate's attention. How big an issue do you think this Roe v. Wade is going to be in the midterms? Is this the summer of choice, effectively? Do you see this as the biggest issue? If not now, certainly when the actual ruling comes down.
I think it's going to be a huge issue. When two out of three voters in this country believe that Roe v. Wade should not be overturned, and then you have the Supreme Court overturning it and Ron Johnson saying it should be overturned, it's a good decision to overturn it, that is going to galvanize young people to register and get to the polls. It's going to galvanize grandmothers mothers, daughters, in ways that we haven't seen before. And so this is the real X factor in the election coming up, regardless of gas prices and food prices. Those are going to be big issues, too. But look, you're going to have turnouts, huge turnouts among women. And it could be decisive. And Ron Johnson is not going to be able to handle this issue at all. And I think it's going to hurt him.
You know, it's interesting, Matt. I expected a pink wave, I sometimes jokingly called it. You know, they talked about a blue wave was coming after Trump got elected. And in 2018, I mean, Tony Evers was the clear front runner in the gubernatorial race. But I saw the strongest comer as being Kelda Royce. And I watched the Supreme Court races where two fairly liberal women in Rebecca Dallet and Judge, now Justice Karofsky, effectively won seats, right? So you see women win places on the court. I thought that Kelda Royce was a strong candidate.
If she had gotten in earlier, she might have been governor.
Well, she had a baby that got in the way during that elective cycle, if I recall. Early in the campaign, she was pregnant. But, man, here's the point. Does Roe v. Wade, do you think it strengthens the cause or at least gives the electorate pause to reconsider, pardon me, maybe a female candidate? I had a good one yesterday, Deb McGrath from the 3rd CD. Recent candidate in studio, Sarah Godlewski. She's obviously a strong candidate.
Yeah, and she's playing up this issue. She was at the U.S. Supreme Court filming an ad saying how outrageous that decision from Alito is.
Well, you know, ironically, Alex Lassery was also in town that night, and he also stood out before the Supreme Court and put out, I wouldn't say an ad, a social media post. But Godlewski has Emily's List. And she is a woman. And at this point, with Patino's exit from the senatorial race, I mean, there's 11 candidates, but she's the only female. Do you think that gives her any sort of electoral advantage in this new inflection point post Roe v. Wade, perhaps?
It might be. I've been wondering about Sarah Godlewski and her chances. I think this gives her a slight potential boost. She hasn't jumped as close as I thought she'd get to Mandela Barnes or Alex Lassery at this point. So I've been waiting for her to move along. But maybe, you know, she's like Rich Strike or whatever.
Now, Matt, obviously, I've got personal opinions about differing ones of these candidates. And I've tried not to wade into the race, you know, at some point maybe, but not
You're yet. Not going to run, are you?
Smart ass. No, it is not my intention to seek the candidacy for the U.S. Senate this term. You know, but watch this space. Maybe something else, sometime other in the future. We'll see. My wife almost divorced me the last time.
Couldn't resist the cheap shot.
Yeah, it landed well. I'm sorry, man, you got me flustered. What was I going to ask you?
Godlewski.
Yes, Godlewski. And Lassery and Nelson and obviously Mandela Barnes and many of these candidates, I mean, we've known them from prior cycles. I even knew Alex Lassery in his role as a Bucks executive. We'd had him on all the way back to 2017. You know, I've known Mandela Barnes since before he could grow a mustache. Seemingly. He was like a 22-year-old state lawmaker when I met
him. He was really young. I remember him coming on stage at a Fighting Bob Fest thing we did at the Barrymore, and he was really young, but he was great and a great speaker even back then. And you know, the progressive base loves Mandela Barnes. That's the thing that Lassery's fighting against right now and everybody else.
Well, it's interesting that Jennifer Rubin at the Washington Post has waded into this race with such frequency. She's interviewed Alex Lassery. She seemingly cast a lot of shade at Mandela Barnes, thinks he's too liberal. Now, she's a conservative opinion columnist at the Washington Post. He's Batman. He is Matt Rothschild, the vigilante of good governance. He's going to stick around one more segment, help me carry through to the happier happy hour and Dom's arrival. You know, presumably Dom's coming. You never can tell. But Batman, he answered the call, and we'll answer your calls if you dial us. Your phone calls could be next. 844-967-2789. If you want to talk to Batman, dial right now.
So Obamacare is still in place, and we've doubled the debt. I don't feel like my time here has been particularly successful.
You are my number one guy.
Why not gargle